Good morning. We're going to open the Senate Committee on Revenue this morning and have bill introduction and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 899. Mary, would you...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill expands from 500 to 600,000, the population level above which a county must create a tax supervising and conservation commission if it doesn't have a county clerk. The background on it is that the law requires that each taxing district provides a copy of its annual budget to a county clerk or to a tax supervising conservation commission if the county in which the district is located does not have a county clerk. However, the requirement does not have to be met if the population of the county is less than 500,000. Well, currently there's only the city of Portland and Multnomah County have populations over 500,000, but according to the Census Bureau, Washington County's population was about 445,000 in 2000. That's an actual count by census count. And the level will approach up roughly 501,000 by July 05 if we use its historical growth rate. At this point, the county would be required to hire a county clerk or fund a tax supervising conservation commission, which could cost them $280,000 a year. The law says it can't exceed that amount.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Multnomah County Commissioner are not available today, and they are the county affected by this bill. We will therefore set this bill over for further hearing probably next week, and we are going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 899 and move on. We close that public hearing on 899, and we open the public hearing on Senate Bill 840.
Give me a couple of minutes. Chair.
Good morning.
Razin Malik, Legislative Revenue Office. Senate Bill 840 is a bill that basically deals with the wine board, the reporting for the ONCC by wine producers. Current law requires each manufacturer to file a report with the OLCC every month. However, it seems many of the 375 producers at this time do not have anything to report each month, and some of them do not do that most often. So this bill will allow the ones that don't or have not owed any taxes for the previous year or don't expect to owe taxes the next year to file on an annual terms. However, I understand that the way the bill is written puts it in a fiscal year type of format, and at this point I don't know how that is going to work. I suspect there have been an amendment that makes it a calendar year rather than a fiscal year. But I don't think that is out of council yet. That was a Friday afternoon amendment that I knew of. However, at this rate, still the bill does not have a revenue impact, and I suspect it doesn't have a fiscal impact either, but I haven't gotten a fiscal impact statement on it yet.
Question of committee administrator here. We have Gary signed up to talk to us. Gary Conklin, known to this committee and many others, and welcome, Gary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Gary Conkling, appearing here today on behalf of the Oregon Wine Growers Association in support of Senate Bill 840. This legislation, as you've just heard, is fairly simple and straightforward. It reduces paperwork for as many as 200 small Oregon wineries and for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission by requiring annual rather than monthly reports on wine production. Wineries report their production when wine is removed from bond, and most small wineries report wine is removed from bond as soon as it is bottled to simplify record keeping. However, current Oregon law requires wineries to submit monthly production reports even if the amount removed from bond is zero. Federal requirements provide an exception for small wineries that allows them to submit annual reports, and Senate Bill 840 mirrors that federal exception for wineries qualifying for Oregon's small winery tax exclusion. OWA has consulted with the OLCC on this proposed reporting change, and in response to an earlier request from OLCC, we made these annual reports due at the end of the agency's fiscal year. However, OLCC has reconsidered and now prefers to have the reports due at the end of each calendar year, and an amendment to accomplish that has been submitted to Legislative Council, and that's what Committee Administrator just referred to a moment ago. OWA respectfully requests your support of Senate Bill 840 with the amendment requested by OLCC. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? No.
We need the amendment, don't we?
That's what we do. Sounds like a good little bill. Help a lot of people. Appreciate your testimony, and there's no one else signed up, no opposition to this bill. Looks like it's something that we will want to move once we have the amendments. So we'll wait for those and bring the bill back at proper time to
when the amendment comes out.
When the amendment comes out. No comments, questions. We will move on to our third and final bill of the day. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 840, and we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 845.
Mr. Chair, members, Senate Bill 845 deals with abandoned property, and abandoned property goes into the Common School Fund. What the bill is doing is to designate that the unused value of gift cards becomes abandoned property after 3 years, either from the date of issue or from the date of the last activity or purchase or transaction on the card. It specifically prohibits issuing cards with an expiration date or that have fees attached, and it also defines the gift card to exclude prepaid phone cards and any prepaid commercial mobile radio services. And it would take effect then on the effective date of the act, which would be January 1 of 06. The bill applies to gift cards issued on or after that date, and so it would take 3 years for cards issued after that date to become abandoned property and then to start to flow into it, so that any revenue for the Common School Fund and the earnings on that fund going to school districts would be out 4 or 5 years, so it wouldn't have any immediate impact.
Looking at the earliest possible 2009-2010.
That 2009-2011 biennium, yes, is when I would expect some benefit to school districts to start.
Thank you. And our fine chairman has arrived. Our first witness, Mr. Chair, is Senator Westland. And we would like to have him come forward and turn it over to you.
Thank you, Senator Starr. That's a beautiful tie you have this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee, for the record, Senator Ben Westland, District 27.
As an aside, I would just like to point out to your august chair that based on your behavior modification techniques and suggestions from this last weekend, I did remove the studs from my car.
Congratulations.
I mean, I figured it hit 70, 75. It might be time to consider.
Well, I promise at least for the rest of the season not to clink my way down the the parking garage. Mr. Chair, committee, I am here to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 845. In reality, it is quite a simple bill, and what it does is provides that gift cards that become abandoned or unclaimed property after 3 years after purchase of the card or the last transaction on the card, those properties would then, as opposed to be held in trust in perpetuity so that citizens could reclaim their value at any time, those properties would then go into unclaimed property and accrue to the common school fund. It's a subtle but I believe necessary shift that would allow these values produced on these cards, probably in best estimates nationally at least, about 40% of the value is not cashed. And it is not ever claimed at any given time. So it sits in a limbo land, not to say that money does not have value, but it is certainly not claimed by the either the people that originally purchased the card or by any mechanism, and provides no value other than to the institutions that originally received the cash and issued the card. How much money is involved? Well, just in Oregon, about $13.6 million of Oregon face value cards that were issued just in this last Christmas season, $13.6 million will go unclaimed or uncashed. That is no small amount of money. And it is money, as I propose and support in this bill, along with Senator Deckert, that it could be better spent in the common school fund for purposes of educating all of our children. This is not, you know, a lose-lose, if you will, in any stretch of the imagination. I mean, companies love gift cards. They're a wonderful merchandising tool. I mean, they create better profits. In many regards, it's like carrying around a little company credit card with free advertising. It promotes new business. I mean, you think about it. You go in to buy the card for your granddaughter or mother or grandma or whoever it is, and you usually just don't go in to buy cards. You go in and buy the toiletries or the stationery or the bed sheets or whatever along while you're buying your card. They're very convenient for customers to use, and they bring those customers that receive the gift of the card back to the store. It's easy to mass market with them. Companies traditionally give out large numbers of these as store promotions. And it's a great gift to charities or nonprofits. There's really every reason to promote the sale and marketing of gift cards. The only question is what happens to the value on those cards after a given period of time, after a time when the cards are no longer thought of, no longer used, no longer recognized, or the owners aren't aware. Well, the bill suggests two changes that would allow not only the cards to be better utilized by their owners. One is putting an expiration date on the card, this card good through whatever date it would be determined. And then if the card is not used by that time and after a three-year period, it would then revert to the common school. Pretty simple, Phil. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator Westland. Questions for Senator Westland, Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator And I'm not sure, I was looking at the witness list, and I didn't see what else on here. So if I ask you something that you don't know, I understand that. I mean, it's just, but there was a couple of things I did know. I thought Section 4 was interesting, and you just alluded to one of it. Most of us have cards that have expiration dates or certificates. I remember, Mr. Chair, a few years ago at one of our committee gatherings after session, I got a gift card, and I found it in my car the other day. And, $75 expired about 6 months ago, however, so it's now worthless. So your bill will take away that expiration date, number one.
No, it will allow it to be put on so you can get...
No, it says here a person may not issue a gift card that has an expiration date, is new language in the bill, Section 4. That's why I'm sorry, I just need to...
Well, I'm missing a point in my own bill.
And then it also says in that same section...
Which is totally possible. It's Monday.
Which
I'll
is predictable, actually, yeah.
And it also says... that a person who issues a gift card may not charge the owner a fee related to the gift card, including dormancy fees, because, you know, the common trend now, if you buy a Meyer and Frank card, that every month it goes down a point or 2%. And so this would eliminate that from happening.
Right.
Which I always thought was pretty stupid, since you paid up front anyway, and the value of money makes it worth less. But still, it is a change in business policy for these folks who issue them. And one question, and the question I really have...
Well, we'll accede to your first point, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Senator Mexer, I will cede to your first point if you will agree to support me on the second.
Okay. Well, that's, you know, we're getting there. That's called negotiation, right? One question I would have, though, and might be interesting to explore is, when you go, for example, the common thing, the McDonald's gift card, all right? So you buy a McDonald's gift card. And I just kind of wonder how, just from a practical standpoint, I love the idea. I mean, if it's not being used and someone's paid for it and the service hasn't been provided, but how, especially for multinational corporations, if those gift cards, if you trace them to, you know, that dollar McDonald's certificate to Oregon as opposed to, you know, Washington or any other state, I just wonder from a... you know, that standpoint, if the corporation is able to determine what monies might be refunded to the state because someone didn't get their Big Mac and it was purchased at an Oregon retailer as opposed to someone else. And I don't necessarily expect you to have that question. That's the things that's kind of going through my mind, is in terms of how you determine from a paperwork standpoint for the businesses involved which ones they are obligated to provide. And maybe one of the other witnesses will have those answers. But
we'll get... You're free to take a swing at that, Senator Westland.
Well, according to my understanding, the Division of State Lands represents that the information collected at the time of sale would be adequate. With that information, it would be easy, and it would be easy to be able to identify, document the fact that under this law, for purposes of this law, that it was an Oregon resident that purchased the gift card or certificate. The information provided. It's not like you hand over $10 and get a $10 gift card. I mean, there's a whole exchange, names, address. I mean, they're trying to expand their mailing list. There's more going on here than just $10 for a $10 gift card.
Yeah. Well,
would be provided.
Well, can I follow up just for a question? Because, for example, I'm just as rich as the simple ones, like the McDonald's ones, you don't take any information at all. You give them $5 and they give you a book of five $1 gift cards. I mean, there's no information exchange. You just pay the cash and they give you the... They give you out of their repertoire of boxes of $5 worth of $1 gift certificate. So there's really no information there. That's one of the technical questions.
I mean, I would think the point of sale is easy enough to find.
If that's determined. That's why I was just wondering how that, you know, what type of extra work may or may not be required of some of these outlets to determine, you know, which ones were actually sold in those states.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Brzezinski.
I'm wondering if the way the systems are set up now, everything's so computerized that when they, you know, they don't punch in the dollar it costs for the Big Mac. They punch in Big Mac, and it itemizes it out on your little receipt or whatever it is. At least in the grocery stores, it pretty well tells what product's going out the door for inventory and everything mm-hmm. else. It would seem that these type of organizations probably have that built into their accounting, that they know exactly, you know, how many pickles have been sold versus shakes.
They very well be. Thank
you. Yeah.
Or to say that a different way, they can tell you how many Big Macs were sold on February 17th at the Welch's store versus February 17th at the Eugene store.
Welch doesn't have a Big Mac outlet yet.
Yeah. That's why you look so good. Yeah, see, they can tell you none, but they can still tell you how many were sold. You know, in store number 742.
Well, the Eugene will be the Mac Tofu.
Yeah, the Mac Tofu. Anyway, colleagues, this is, I think, an exceptional bill, and I charge the committee with making what is already a good bill as best as it can be. I thank you.
Well, Senator Westland, thank you for starting our Monday off with a healthy charge there to improve what is already a very good bill. Any other questions or thoughts? Just like to mention that we mentioned McDonald's, and within 2 minutes, their lobbyist is in the hearing room, and so that is amazing representation, and you can quote that. Thank you, Senator. Okay, well, let's go to Jeanette. We're gonna, if we could, let you back clean up because I think we're gonna have questions that come up, and you'll be the one that can give us those answers. Let's do Tricia Smith, Lori Wimmer Whalen, and Otto Schell.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, Lori Wimmer Whalen with Oregon Education Association, representing 43,000 members. And we are here today, pleased to have you hear this bill. Thank you very much for your co-sponsorship, Mr. Chair. And we're here in support, of course, of Senate Bill 845 as one of the requesters. We are pleased to be part of the Division of State Lands Education Advisory Group, which conceived of this bill during the interim at the DSL Summit on the Common School Fund. And to clarify a couple points, what this bill would do would be, as a consumer protection matter, it would make the practices of hidden or overt expiration dates, as well as these service fees, not allowable if the card is purchased in Oregon, as well as then send after 3 years of inactivity on the card the remaining face value to the unclaimed property unit of the DSL, with the idea being that the interest on that face value accrues to the Common School Fund. We believe that the dual benefits of this proposal, consumer protection and long-term funding for education, ought to make this concept a slam dunk for passage. We're gratified to our sponsors of the bill, and also I've attached with my testimony a two-page information sheet for you that gives you the key issues with respect to gift cards. And I'd like to make sure that you hear clearly gift cards and not gift certificates. Those are handled differently. These are explicitly the gift cards. As Senator Westland told you, gift cards are wildly popular. Nationwide, over the last 5 years, the trajectory for the sale of these for just about everything from department stores to home improvement centers to restaurants and so on has really been on a steep incline, and it shows no sign of abating. They're popular both from the merchant's point of view and for the gift giver and recipient's point of view for all the reasons. I mean, you never have a wrong-fitting gift card. You never have something that clashes with your decor. The idea of a gift card is that someone can get a nice gift that they themselves choose based on their taste, and you don't have that buyer indecision. And so for that reason, they're very handy. But what happens to all of us as busy people is that they sometimes get thrown in a desk drawer, an old wallet, or a forgotten handbag, and forgotten. And I think Senator Metzger just said he just found one that now has no value because of an expiration date on his. Now, somebody paid the money for that card. The vendor pocketed that money for that card, and that ought to be an instrument for a transaction, irrespective of the time that has passed. After 3 years, I think that would be a reasonable period of time to expect either some transfer of value there for a piece of merchandise or a dinner or whatever, or else revert to unclaimed property. What happens with unclaimed property, all unclaimed property that the Division of State Lands has now, is that it is held in trust in perpetuity for the consumer. And this is a very important point. The same thing would happen with gift cards, just as it would with a stock you inherited but didn't know about, or a paycheck you never cashed, or what have you. You could at any point check with the Division of State Lands, Unclaimed Property Division, and say, do I have anything under my name? And they can run out a printout that tells you what they're holding for you. No questions asked. One-stop shopping. You can get that back. Adding this to it is just making it even more convenient for consumers. And so we think that that is its prime value as a piece of legislation. But because the Common School Fund also ultimately receives the interest off that face value, in the meanwhile, it also is an education funding bill. So it's a win-win for everyone. As I said, you've got a lot more of the issues related to gift cards on that fact sheet. But one point I really want to make is that it's because this transaction instrument is so ubiquitous now in Oregon, we need some common sense consumer protection to prevent businesses from turning what amounts to an interest-free loan that they get up front to a gift to themselves instead of the recipient. So that's why the prohibition on expiration dates and service fees. If you don't have that, there is no unclaimed property face value to be received. So we're happy to have the support of both the Division of State Lands and the State Treasurer's Office on this bill, and we would refer any technical questions you might have to them because they are the experts on this. A lot of other states have done this, and you'll see that. So anyway, we thank you for considering this bill and respectfully request a due pass recommendation to the Senate floor. Thank you.
Thank you. How many other states do you know offhand?
Offhand, Mr. Chair, I don't know how many other states. I know that that legislation is brisk in recent years, though. But it's becoming clear to everybody that, this is
have an
active an issue.
Sort of gift card. Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Otto Schell. I'm here with on behalf of the Oregon PTA, representing the 23,000-plus members of the PTA across Oregon. I'm happy to say we're in our 100th year of advocating for children in schools in Oregon. I was thinking about what I could bring to you that would be something slightly different because I don't pretend to be an expert on this. And I thought about the experience that we have in our school communities. As many of you have noted, these cards have become wildly popular in our school communities as a way of raising money for schools. And I, in my own school, we use Scrip, which is you buy and allow a certain amount from a vendor, and you usually get one of these plastic cards. It made a lot of sense to me that PTA and the schools community could get behind and support this kind of a bill, because if the card goes stale or is abandoned, then having it roll into the schools, the Common School Fund, made a lot of sense from our perspective. I'm like Senator Metzger. I dug in my wallet to find out what the current status of this little card that I have, and I'm embarrassed to say that I'm busy picking up $1.50 a month account fee unless I live in California. So this is a Barnes & Noble card. It has probably 10 bucks on it, so I better go buy something sooner than later. We share the observation that this is a good consumer bill. We think that our members would be benefited from it. Putting the disclosure or making it clear to the person who's getting the card, use it or lose it, that failing, having it roll over into the Common School Fund made a lot of sense. And we think that the bill is good for consumers and good for schools. So, thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Comments? Senator Farrell, you want to redeem a gift card?
No.
Or look in your wallet. Yeah.
No.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association, and we are here today to enthusiastically support Senate Bill 845 as a member of the Common School Fund Beneficiaries Coalition. We are happy to support Senate Bill 845 because it fits very well in OSEA's effort to look at every funding source that exists today for schools and finding the way to maximize that funding source for schools so that we can thereby relieve whatever pressure possible on the general fund and other services. It makes no sense to us to continue to come to this building and beat your head against any while available over the general fund number for schools without first looking at every other funding source and trying to maximize that funding source. The Common School Fund is certainly one of those sources. The Department of State Lands estimates that we will receive $42 million in the next biennium from interest earned on the Common School Fund. We think this bill, Senate Bill 845, will help us in our efforts to double the principal of the Common School Fund in the next decade. This will allow us to use that money that ostensibly is sitting dormant somewhere to invest it and thereby use the interest to improve the Common School Fund for our schools. As a mother of a 16-year-old, as I was thinking about this bill, I went into Aaron's room and looked around to see just how many gift cards he might have. And I'll tell you, a teenage boy thinks a gift card is a gift from heaven. They love them. He has all sorts of them, many with little bits of money on them, which he considers to be no longer of value to him because he can't buy a video game with them or he can't buy what it is he wants from that particular store because they don't have as much money as they need any longer on the card. So he throws them on a shelf and they are forgotten. When I talked to him about this bill, he thinks it's a pretty cool idea that at some point somewhere he could go somewhere and like the website at the Division of State Lands and type in his name and be able to recover those little bits of money on those gift cards that he doesn't believe he can recover at this point. So my son Aaron thinks this is a good bill too. We hope that you will seriously consider this bill. We understand that the Division of State Lands in their testimony will suggest a couple of amendments to you, one to deal with the effective date of the bill, which you've heard as it's written today. We will not receive revenue from this bill for two biennia, and by amending the bill that we could begin receiving revenue sooner. And the second is to clarify how the point of sale would be determined. And that would be helpful, I'm sure, to retailers as well as consumers. So we would support those amendments. And as I said, we hope that with those amendments, you will pass this bill on to the full Senate for consideration and help us in our effort to maximize money for schools that's available to us.
Thank you. Questions for the panel. Lori, I have one. On the 40% of face values ever cashed, Steve showed me an article from the Wall Street Journal. I know it's difficult to pin it down the exact percent, but it had it at 10%.
Mr. Chair, I've seen numbers that range from 10 to 40. The research that I got from the Division of State Lands is a pile about this thick, and I can share any of it with you you'd like to see. And so there is some fluctuation, but it's a moving estimate. It's as much as 40%.
As much as 40%. Okay.
I had a question.
Senator Metzger, is the pear now Oregon's official fruit, or is that still
See how fast we can move when we really get going. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question, Lori, and again, maybe someone else can answer this, but I wanted to throw it out there, because you made a comment when you were testifying that gift card did not mean gift certificate, and I don't understand, unless there, are you telling me there's a definition for gift certificate in statute that is different than this? Because I didn't see that. Because it says here, a gift card means a pre-funded record issued for consideration, evidencing a promise that the issuer will provide a good or service. Well, that's what a certificate is. So, semantically, I'm not so sure that's any different unless there is a specific definition.
Yes. Mr. Chair and Senator Metzger, I believe I did see in my research that there has been a very explicit carve-out as gift certificates are different. And the reason I wanted to make that point is that a lot of very small Main Street businesses tend to issue the little paper gift mm-hmm. certificates, and we don't want to go after that. We think that that would be an administrative burden yeah. for that little small Main Street business. Gift cards are another thing entirely. They're far more large businesses that have a much higher profit margin and stature in the community tend to issue gift cards. And so my belief is, and I can get the reference for you if someone else doesn't already come up with it before I do, I'll get you the statutory site.
Yeah, I would appreciate that because I think, and you pointed out what could be the issue, and I just want to make sure that we don't say something that we thought we weren't doing and then finding out that Bill's hardware store in right. you know, the Dalles all of a sudden has to report to the Department of Revenue. So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. Julie Brandis, AOI.
AUR.
Associated Oregon Industries.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, I am Julie Brandis from Associated Oregon Industries and its Retail Council. For your own information, Associated Oregon Industries represents probably 10 of the nation's largest retailers, but we also have about 200 to 300, depending on the count, what I would call small Main Street retailers. We are here today in opposition to this bill. We have been following this issue for a long time, and gift certificates, gift cards, I don't know. I'm surprised to hear that there's actually two statutory definitions. But they were removed from a sheet law in 97. And the reason we fought for this in 97 and also in 95 was because originally what we were told by the Division of State Lands was, okay, the gift card belongs to the owner. If I bought it at Talbot's and I gave it to Betsy Earls, it is owned by her. And there is no way for Talbot's to track who the owner is when the Division of State Lands comes knocking. I bought it for her. I might have paid cash. I might have paid with my Talbot's credit card. I might have paid with my Visa card. You have said in other committees that you do not want retailers cross-checking information. You don't want us buying one thing and then getting it matched to our Visa cards, among other things. So that was part of the arguments that we had, and these are similar arguments that have occurred in other states. Based on the information I got over the weekend, 23 states exempt gift cards from unclaimed property. What I think you have seen the increase in other states is the prohibition against things such as expiration dates on the gift cards. That legislation is indeed increasing in Oregon. I do note that the way I read the bill is you have a conflict. You say this gift cards can't, you can't have expiration dates on gift cards, but the state can place one on your gift card as of 3 years, based on my read of the bill. As you know, the purpose of the unclaimed property statute is to reunite the owner and the property. And since the owner of the gift card, as given by example, is unknown, there is no means to reunite the property with the owner. Moreover, the state is effectively forcing retailers to convert a non-cash gift card into cash, giving the state more rights than the true owner. For example, this is my December 21st, 2000 gift certificate. It would be a gift card today because that's what Talbot issues. I have not claimed this because of size fraud at Talbot's. And
now, Julie, you've got to know your audience here. You should have stuck with Bill's Hardware.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. I have my Bi-Mart one, too, okay? But the point is, I can only get a suit or a shirt or jewelry or whatever from this gift card. And what the state would be doing under this law is saying, we get the cash to earn interest on. I would never get cash from Talbot's by turning this in. So we believe that is an unconstitutional, and we have only one court case in Tennessee that interferes with the contract between the retailer and with the purchaser or the owner. So let's see. I think I've covered all those points. State doesn't know who it is. I think one of the points that you brought up, one of the questions brought up, is actually pretty interesting, too. If the gift card is purchased in Portland, as I assume this one probably was, I might give it to somebody in Washington, or I might send it to my friend in Washington, D.C., or so on and so forth. Again, it's supposed to sheet to the owner, and we don't know where the owner is or what state the owner is in. As for point-of-sale information, this is a hard fight that we've already had with the Division of State Lands back in the mid-90s about they had wanted us to take information from the purchaser about, again, who bought it and where it was going. And we obviously fought that quite hard and won that battle. So those are some of our concerns about this piece of legislation, and I'll answer those questions that I'm able to.
Thank you, Julie. Senator Prusansky.
Thank you, Julie. Thanks for being here. Based on your testimony, I got a number of questions. I guess the first one is that you said that 23 states exclude these from being included within this definition of unclean property. So does that mean there's 27 states that do include them?
That is correct.
So more than half the states do. Mm-hmm.
But, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my understanding is that the 23 is going upwards based on the development of court cases.
One court case that we know
so far, but there's developments in other states that haven't been decided. Tennessee is the only one that has a decision.
Okay. The owner, I mean, couldn't the argument really be the owner is the person who actually put that money down and purchased that? What they choose to do with that card, use it themselves for whatever reason they want to hold on to it and use it that way as compared to giving it to someone else? But we actually have, at the point of sale, the owner is the person who's given cash to the store for that card.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the Division of State Lands is required to match the owner of the gift or the owner of whatever with the unclaimed property. It is our belief that the owner is the holder of the gift card. My very generous mother-in-law, who gives me more gift certificates than I could ever keep up with, is not the owner of this. I am.
You're the owner of it because your name has been placed on that.
She gave it to me, but she just got a blank $75. She could have given it to me. She could have given it to her daughter, Vicky. She could have given it to anybody. I am the owner.
And she could have put her own name there.
She could have.
And since she paid, we actually have a way of saying she is the original owner. She chooses to give that away. Then it's given to someone else, but she's the one that actually put the money there. And that really brings me to my last question. Why should a merchant, no matter who they are, be able to realize a benefit to this point of someone not, for whatever reason, taking advantage of it, be it a death, be it an absent-mindedness, or in one case, as we've seen, using some type of arbitrary date of expiration?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, the retailers that I represent do not have expiration dates on their credit card or their cards. I'm very absent-minded. I can walk into a Talbot's at any point and use this. It is, you know, my choice that I haven't used it yet. I don't live in a town with a Talbot's. It's hard for me to remember these things, to bring this up to Portland when I go. So, the retailer might be realizing an unclaimed, or how they generally credit it is, uncashed gift cards. It's like having a... Oh, I can't think of the term. Sorry. It'll come to me when I get back there. But anyway, that is my choice, not their choice. They actually prefer that people come into the store with a gift card because it's likely, most likely, that I will spend more than the $75 on this. When I come into the Talbot's and I decide I'm going to finally buy a suit... it's going to cost me probably $175 or $250. This will only pay for a portion of it. So retailers want people in their stores. That is that is the biggest benefit of gift cards.
So, Mr. Chair, I don't know if I really got an answer as to why should anybody be able to realize this windfall and why shouldn't we be either reclaiming it for as a state... trying to think what the
unclaimed property.
Yeah, unclaimed property is one of them, but there's actually the like on the 5 cent on the nickel deposits, there's the money that just kind of just sits there because those bottles get broken, cans get crushed or whatever, and they're not recycled. And so it just seems to me that for the betterment of, in this case, school kids, that we would be able to actually have that money. If it's your choice or my choice not to use it, at least those kids are going to potentially have some type of benefit from it.
Mr. Chair, members of committee, I think the struggle you will have is trying to define when something is unclaimed. Because this hasn't been used, but it's not unclaimed. This is my property.
It's your property, but the store still has... I'm still not hearing why the store in this case versus an individual is getting the benefit from it.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, perhaps I don't have an answer to that, but I think that the point is that unclaimed property, the role of the Division of State Lands is to reunite the owner with the property. Now, if they want to ask the retailers to contact all holders of gift receipts that haven't been claimed in 3 years, that might be the more appropriate role.
Mr. Chair, one other question.
Senator Wisniewski.
Under that theory, Julie, do you believe that retailers should have some duty before they sell a gift card to actually have some type of disclaimer to the person purchasing it? These are what you lose if you don't use it, or if you give it to someone and they don't use it, and that we get to keep the money and such?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you're going to change the law, that would probably be in the best interest of the state to have retailers explain that the state will take the property in 3 years.
I'm saying the other way around.
Well, I understand that. The other way around, many of the gift cards have a stamp on the back that say, you know, this can be redeemed for product, et cetera, et cetera, and that actually does constitute a contract in our view. If you would like more requirements on the back of those cards, that's certainly an option of the state.
Thank you.
Do you know how? Sorry,
no, go ahead.
Do you know how the Tennessee court ruled in the first case?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I think that they ruled that it did indeed deem a contract between the purchaser and the store, and that contract was, you can redeem this for product at any point because there was no expiration date.
So my guess is, and we can have...
I have the court case here. I just haven't read it all. Sorry.
Or we can, maybe if you have a chance to talk to Steve Meyer. I mean, to me, I guess the case would be one of those 27 states that have non-exempted, and Oregon's considering being the 28th, I guess, with this bill. My guess would be the terms of the case are that the retailer challenged that state statute.
Yes.
That said, and it would be interesting to know at least what the first court case found.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the retailer, I believe, I thought I brought the case up here with me, but the retailer or whomever challenged the treasurer's office.
The treasurer of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Senator Metzger.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Julie, I want to just take one part of this question since we have the opportunity to have you up here representing AOLI on part of this bill, because you talked about the expiration date issue. And certainly when you enter into these contracts and you're paying cash, it is a great deal for the retailer forgetting the fact that a lot of them aren't used, but, I mean, you're paying up cash for a service, so you have to deliver at a lower cost as the price of money goes down in the future. What is your organization's position on the one portion of the bill that would say that you were not allowed to issue a gift card that has an expiration date?
We don't. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we don't have a problem with that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Senator Brzezinski.
Mr. Chair, I was going to ask, I was waiting for the representative of the department, I guess, Deborah, coming up. But I'm going to go ahead and throw this question out. On the amendments, I'm assuming that the amendments would actually allow the state to potentially start realizing money into this fund earlier. And I'm wondering, based on what Julie's brought to us, if this is a contract that was found to be enforceable in Tennessee, then maybe what we need to do is make certain that we set a date certain from this date forward in this state, we will not allow for this type of contract to be entered into by the parties. And that in itself would, in fact, take us out of that concern of having a challenge breaching a contract the two parties have entered into. And so that would mean that we just have a date certain from that date forward, the contracts, that this type of contract, where you contract for your rights, would no longer be seen as good for the public. And the state can, in fact, set limits on those topics.
But would that mean that the Common School Fund, sorry, Steve, would all automatically derive, I mean, I think you'd have to put that assertively into the bill, would be my guess.
Well, you just say the date that this would become effective on a certain date, and that means any gift certificates that were purchased from that date forward would be able to be placed into the fund. That's what I'm thinking, without seeing the case. Because it sounds to me what happened in Tennessee, they said this was a pre-existing contract that the state may have tried to recoup that money into for their use or whatever it was.
Thoughts or questions? Thanks, Julie. Appreciate the testimony. John Marshall, Chuck Bennett from OSBA and COSA.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. John Marshall, representing the Oregon School Boards Association. I am certainly not versed well enough in the mechanics of this bill to respond to some of the technical questions you've raised, and I'm hopefully that the Department of State Lands, when they speak to this, can talk about how gift cards and so forth were handled before 97 and how they would be potentially be handled should Senate Bill 845 become law. But I do want to point out the importance of the Common School Fund and the extent to which it's becoming a larger portion of school funding. If you look at the governor's budget that was proposed to fund K-12 schools in 05-07, and the amount of growth that's anticipated not only from the state school fund but also from our local revenue, the most significant portion of that pot that grows comes from local revenue sources. That includes not only certainly the largest property taxes, but also revenue from the Common School Fund. We're looking forward to hopefully in the next couple of years when the corpus of that fund will reach $1 billion. And as part of the Common School Fund Beneficiaries Coalition, we're looking at all kinds of opportunities to enhance the size of that fund. And I think you need to understand that the principle of that fund stays forever. It's the interest and the earnings on that fund that provide the annual, semi-annual distributions to schools. So any dollars that go into the fund serve to benefit Oregon Public Schools forever. That is, a dollar put in today, the earnings on that dollar will accrue to school districts for not only the children that are there today, but also their children's children. And so forth. We're going to be looking at a variety of different approaches to enhance the revenue from the Common School Fund. You will be looking at a bill, or some committee will be looking at a bill, to place the unclaimed property program into the office of the state treasurer. Just because this National State Treasurers Organization has been looking at a variety of issues, not only how states manage the unclaimed property, but to increase the visibility of the unclaimed property program so that the property that's there, held in perpetuity, will ultimately hopefully fall into the hands of the rightful owners. We're also looking at a bill to streamline the distributions from the Common School Fund to school districts. Now there's a relatively circuitous route that those dollars follow, and we believe that there's a possibility for the dollars from the Common School Fund earnings to get into the hands of school districts sooner. So these are all kinds of things that we're looking at. I think that the important point to remember about unclaimed property is that that property is held in trust for the owners or the beneficiaries of that property forever in perpetuity. Once if there's a dollar value to that property or the property is ultimately sold, the proceeds from that sale are held in perpetuity for the owner. And so if I realize years and years down the road that I have some unclaimed property, I can get that. And there are ways that the Division of State Lands, Department of State Lands, markets that in order to make individuals aware that they have that unclaimed property. So it's not as though we're going to take these gift cards and sell them or try to create some value to put in the Common School Fund where the rightful owners can't get them. They're held for the rightful owners, and it's only the earnings on that property that accrues to the Common School Fund and benefits school children. So with that, I'll close and hopefully be able to work with you and the other proponents of this bill to work out some of the issues that have been raised this morning. Thank you.
Mr. Bennett.
Mr. Chair, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. We also are involved in the Beneficiaries Coalition and certainly want to associate our organization with all the comments from proponents of the bill thus far this morning. Just a couple of points I'd like to make. I borrowed a copy of the 1997 fiscal impact statement form on House Bill 2591, which was the bill that removed
gift certificates from the SGDIP program, from the unclaimed property program. And one of the things that's really noticeable in this fiscal impact statement is the reference to these purely as gift certificates. And Ms. Brandeis showed you a gift certificate, and certainly that was the state of the art at that time. But times have changed rapidly since 1997, and the issue now is gift cards. And the claims at the time in 1997 was that it was a major bookkeeping problem. It was a substantial issue for retailers to try to keep track of these gift certificates, this paper trail. This thing has been computerized wildly beyond what's expected. At this point, just to give you an example, at this point, the state of Delaware uses, which is, I think as we all know, generally a corporate headquarters state, 10% of its general fund comes from unclaimed property coming in from other states. This has become a real problem. A lot of states have given up their right to these unclaimed dollars. These unclaimed dollars flow into states like Delaware and become available to the people of Delaware. More the fools us if we continue this practice, it strikes me. The other thing, and I really want to underscore this, Mr. Marshall's comments regarding what happens to unclaimed property, it is held in perpetuity. Rather than an expiration date imposed by a retailer, these funds remain available forever to the beneficiary or their heirs to claim these dollars, and we think that's a very important change in the nature of these cards and their value. I guess the other thing, responding to Senator Metzger's question about whether this affects cards or gift certificates, in talking with the division about this, I think there is some confusion. I think it probably does apply to both. And the question, I think, is whether in 1997 dealing with these paper certificates like Ms. Brandeis held up from Talbot's, perhaps there is a reason, and the reason persists in keeping that kind of gift certificate separate. But the gift card itself, that computerized, carefully monitored and controlled and I'm sure trailed amount of money from point of sale to its redemption, certainly I think all of us have a gift card in our wallet. I looked at mine. It happened to be a Starbucks card with a $2, after a certain period, $2 is deducted from that card. I'm sure now I owe Starbucks something. I'm starting to fall. I have got to get a cappuccino here. But I think that this is the technology I think we're talking about, and this is the kind of value that we're talking about. And it has grown dramatically. At the time of the 1997 fiscal impact statement, the anticipated loss over 10 years was $2.2 million to the Common School Fund. But the growth in this clearly indicates that this is a much larger income resource for the school kids. I guess ultimately a way of preserving a value for the person who bought the card in the first place or who was the recipient of the card in the first place. We really urge you to support the bill, the heart of the bill, which is to assist the Common School Fund, and certainly as any amendments are needed to improve the bill, we'd be actively supporting those amendments. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Questions for the panel? Senator George.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Page 2, line 27, section 3, it says, the value of a gift card is presumed to be abandoned if the value of the gift card has been redeemed within 3 years. How do you maintain ownership on something that's been abandoned? Is that a technicality of law I'm not catching?
I would ask that you'd ask that question of the division. I think they can give you a real clear picture of what the legal meaning of abandon is. But I think what you and I would call abandon, they're going to call something else. So.
Thanks.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Kate Richardson, Jeanette Holman, I'm going to mispronounce, Ms. Cindy Wickham. And before we just jump right into, and maybe this is what you're going to do, is just kind of give us an overlay, because we've had actually a number of questions about the program. If you could just provide just kind of a 101 on what we have today and what we're looking at if this bill was passed.
Mr. Chair, do you want me to do that before Kate testifies too?
If okay. Kate wants you to.
Okay. Chair Deckert, members of the committee, we have prepared testimony, but I will go ahead and try and answer some of your questions and do an overview instead. For the record, my name is Jeanette Holman. I'm the Assistant Director for Administration and Finance at the Department of State Lands. With me today is Cindy Wickham, who is our manager of the Unclaimed Property Program in Oregon. And when we really get to the hard questions, I'm going to be turning to Cindy. So, first of all, a little overview about unclaimed property generally. What happens with right now when a piece of property, whether it's a bearer bond, whether it's a traveler's check, whether it's a credit balance, it becomes abandoned after a set period of time. And by that we mean there's been no activity on the account. Checking accounts that have no activity for a certain period of time, safe deposit box contents that haven't had any activity over a period of time, those things become abandoned after that period of time, which is set forth in the statutes. The same would be true with gift certificates, or gift cards. If the if there's no activity on a card for a certain period of time, which I think we've established is 3 years in this bill, then the holder, which is the person who issued the card, would be required to turn that money over to the Department of State Lands as unclaimed property. We then hold that property in perpetuity for the true owner or for their heirs. So even if someone turns over $75 to us in unclaimed property and then passes away, their heirs can claim that property as part of their estate, and we do have that happen fairly regularly. People who are administering an estate will make an inquiry as to whether there's any unclaimed property that this person held, and will turn it over to the estate. A couple of clarifications as I see it with this bill. As it's currently worded, I would say it would include the paper gift certificates. There's no language in there that would take that out. If indeed that is not wanted, and it is the harder part of this to track as far as because it's a paper trail as opposed to an electronic trail that you see with the current gift cards, we'd be willing to work on amendments to help craft that.
Could you do that?
Yes, we could.
Thank you.
The other thing I would like to clarify is that in unclaimed property law nationally, there is what we call a rule of priority. And what that does is tell us how you decide where unclaimed property, where it goes. And it was set forth in a U.S. Supreme Court case. And the first rule is that you turn the unclaimed property over to the state where the last known address of the owner that has the name and address. If it's property where there is a name and an address, for example, with a bank account, the holder tries to locate that person according to their last known records, and that's the state that this property is turned over to. The second rule is it's the state of incorporation of the holder. So if you don't know the name and address of the person who is the owner, the holder then turns it over to the state of their incorporation. This is where we get the Delaware situation. Many, many companies are incorporated in Delaware, and so they receive a lot of unclaimed property where the name and address of the owner is unknown. The third is a transaction test. And that's probably what we would be looking at in many of these instances because it's where the transaction occurred. If for some reason the name and address is not captured with the sale of a gift, to the purchase of a gift card, the transaction most certainly is. And that transaction, place of transaction would be the state where the holder would be required to turn the gift card proceeds over to. The other thing I would point out about this bill, on page 1, line 17, in the definition of gift card, it says issued for consideration. We would read that to exclude gift cards that someone issues for charitable, as a charitable donation to a school or to an entity that wants to give them away as part of a program. So those could be excluded from having to be reported as unclaimed property. I'm not familiar with the Tennessee case that Ms. Brandis testified about. I'll have to look at that to give you more information about it. My suspicion is that it was indeed a retroactive issue, that language on the back of the card was deemed a contract that couldn't be interfered with legislation. And in my testimony, one of the two things that we suggested was trying to change that date of when the bill takes effect to capture the unclaimed property at an earlier date. My concern about that and what I would have to work with legislative counsel on is whether that indeed would be interference with contract, and if there's a way to craft it so that it wouldn't be, in order to move up that capture date. Those are the questions that I'm aware of, and just a couple of things about that I'll cover from our testimony that I don't think was covered. Unclaimed property is really a two-part. We look at it as serving two major purposes in Oregon. One is that it's a consumer protection aspect of it that says that whenever the owner can't find that property, they have one place to go to look for it if it's abandoned. The second is that it benefits the public in general because it's not a privatist cheat. It goes to the state. Generally, privatist cheat is not favored, and which is why we have unclaimed property in the first place. In Oregon, for us, of course, the benefit goes to our K-12 schools because the income, not the property itself, but the income earned on that property while it's held in the Common School Fund, is distributed annually, twice a year, to our schools. And it's the only thing that comes out of that income before it's distributed is the cost of running the unclaimed property program itself. The only other thing I would add from my testimony that I point out is that we would suggest that some methodology be determined for determining the purchase date of residence. And again, I go back to that rule of transaction, or if known, the name and address. I mean, we generally would follow that same rule, those three priorities, in any unclaimed property that we have. And if we need to clarify that in the bill, we'd be happy to work with you on that. With that, I'd be glad to answer any other questions.
Senator George.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. This tie right here is a Harley-Davidson tie. It was from a gift certificate, the latest part of Harley-Davidson. When I bought the tie, I asked them the question, oh, I have money left on the card, can I get cash? And the answer was no, you can't get cash. It's a transaction based upon the idea that you're going to come in here and purchase another tie or something else. How do you get cash out of it?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, what we would get cash is if you waited for 3 or 4 years to come back and use that. And just by operation of the law, we say that you've abandoned that property after that period of time, and that you may not look for that property at the Harley-Davidson store again, but you could come to the department and or to check our website and find that cash that's remaining.
Mr. Chairman, let me clarify that. The question is, they give me goods. but you're going to get cash out of it. How do you do that when the contract between my daughter when she bought the gift certificate and latest Harley-Davidson was that she was going to give them cash, they were going to give her a product? How do you then reconvert after that point and make it become cash? If I couldn't do it as the person who holds the card, if you declare after 3 years I've abandoned it, how do you get the cash out of it then? It seemed to me like it had violated the original contract.
Mr. Chair, Senator Georgia, we just take the remaining cash value, and I guess it's just through operation of the law that we get that money. In return, what Harley-Davidson gets is that they are no longer liable for that outstanding balance to you in any way.
Other questions, Senator Brzezinski?
Not a question. I think just to follow up on that, to me it's a public policy issue, and I think what we need to do is we need to look forward with LC, because if this is going to move forward, we want to make certain that we don't put merchants in a place where they're being treated different than what they should be treated, in the sense of we set a contract principle that says that you cannot limit this to only for goods and services, that it does have a value and retains a value, and that any contract after a certain date, we can clarify that and make that as a public policy. And it goes back to that same issue. That person who puts that $50 down for that gift card, gift certificate, they've given money and they've now received something which is called bearer paper. Until it's filled in, anyone who takes it in can use it, and they're going to get that full amount. And if there, I mean, there's ways of dealing with it, because we're not the first state to look at it. There's 27 states that already have this in place.
That, you know, that was going to be my comment, is that with 27 other states, just on the point on methodology of point of sale, there should be guidance of how they've grappled with this question to determine that point of sale and how other states would interact with.
I want to thank you. I didn't catch your first name.
Jeanette.
Jeanette, thank you, because the word I was looking for earlier was the sheets. One of those legal terms that, you know, kind of.
I thought you were talking about sheets on a bed, so.
That's from Texas.
I'm safe. Senator George.
Well, I want to try to get a little handle on this concept. If we specify in law that, in fact, this can be converted to cash, and then we expect that a person who's selling a card or taking cash for an electronic card to then just get 100% back, they've got a lot of costs involved with just that transaction. And yet, technically, if we wrote it that way, I would be able to walk in, if I had a $100 card, I could say, I want $100 cash. Now, I can assure you that if we put a cash capture at the end, you know, like for example, let's go back to them, I have $20, $25 left of the card. I would have my 25 bucks right now, but instead I'm trying to contemplate on how I go back to the latest Harley-Davidson to buy some other thing. They don't want to go along with a deal like that, because I would have cashed the card when I bought all this stuff and been gone. So I think you're going to get a big backlash, or I'm going to capture my cash before the state ever gets their hands on it.
But that may, Mr. Chair, if I could, that might happen, but there's stores that are like REI. They actually do that. You go in there, you utilize the card, and they ask you, do you want this back in cash, or do you want to leave it on the card? There are some... Well, I'll stop there.
Ms. Richardson, or Ms. Quicken?
I'll just back up.
Back up. You're doing a great job.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Kate Richardson, Chief of Staff, Oregon State Treasurer's Office. I'm here on behalf of the Treasurer, as he is a member of the Land Board, which is a trustee of the Common School Fund and is involved with the Unclaimed Property Program because of the Department of State Lands oversees that program and the benefit inures to the Common School Fund. Also, our National Association of State Treasurers is affiliated with the National Association of Unclaimed Property Administrators. There is an association for everything, and this one is known by the acronym NAPA. And so these issues have been particularly on our radar screen of late. We're also, the Land Board is also exploring changes to the Unclaimed Property Program, as was mentioned before, which exists for that dual purpose of returning unclaimed property to the rightful owners and benefiting the Common School Fund in the process of doing so. The Treasurer supports Senate Bill 845, he generally believes the public would expect these dormant gift cards to be abandoned property. And in fact, we receive quite a few calls because many unclaimed property programs do reside in treasurer's offices across the nation. And so we often receive unclaimed property calls, and we have had calls about gift cards in the past. Abandoned property, for the public policy reasons mentioned before, this program exists for that public policy reason that the benefit of the interest can inure to the public good while the state is seeking the rightful owner, and that I think that reflects a public policy that the state has that motivation to find a rightful owner. That windfall of the interest, if you will, should inure to the public good. We'd also make the observation that this would protect that gift card in the event that a business, a merchant closes or goes into bankruptcy as well, that in unclaimed property, because that's held into perpetuity, even if, 8 years down the line that business no longer exists, the rightful owner could still find that remainder dormant gift card through the unclaimed property program. So we just would ask your support of this bill, and happy to answer any questions, although they're probably better answered by Cindy.
Questions for Kate. Senator George.
Okay. I'm just trying to get this whole thing in my mind here, and it's not too easy because I think about, I'm going to get all of these reported abandoned cards, and you all are going to get into the process of trying to add in all the data and track all of those, and we could be tracking $5, $10, $15, $20. And I know what you guys charge us when we try to get a fiscal on something, and you'll say the transaction cost is $100. Now, Mike, my question is, when you look at the average amount of residual that would be on a card, can you make this pay?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, I'm going to pass that question to Ms. Wickham, because that is exactly what the unclaimed property does with many, many different types of property.
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, for the record, I'm Cindy Wickham, the unclaimed property administrator for the state of Oregon at the Department of State Lands. There's already a provision in the law that says any property under the value of $50 does not have to include an owner's name and address and can be reported in the aggregate. Conceivably, a lot of these balances would be reported in the aggregate.
Follow up.
Senator George.
How would I be able to reclaim my money if, there's no name tied to the, attached to the aggregate amounts? It doesn't show a $20 unnamed person?
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, usually what we find happens is when people make a claim, especially for the small dollar items, is that they have found the original instrument and they bring it to us. Now, if a company had said we have $1,000 in unclaimed gift certificates from this time period, and there was a mechanism where we could say, yes, there's $2.50 on this person's card, then we would pay them out of that aggregate amount.
Well,
Senator George.
So let me get this straight. We're going to go to the end of the 3-year period, and now my money has been declared to be abandoned. You still face the problem of the fact that mine was a transaction based upon cash exchange for the ability to buy something at that store. How do you actually, because you're going to try to capture cash from the retailer who had a residual amount, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, that's how I read the bill, yes.
Okay. Has anybody looked at the contract violations that might be inherent in that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, I understand that we're going to look at them before we proceed further with this bill.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Did you want to?
Mr. Chair, Senator Deckert, or Senator Deckert.
Hey, Senator George.
Mr. Chair, Senator George. I would in some ways draw an analogy here between a credit balance that a store might have. When you go into a store or return a product, something from a store, they give you often a credit balance. Those credit balances are reportable now as cash after a certain period of time if they don't refund them to you, you know, themselves within a certain period of time. So I would say that these unclaimed balances on a gift card would be very similar to the same kind of arrangement that stores currently have with credit balances that they are, that are reportable now. They're just using, in many cases, in fact, I went into the bond right after Christmas and exchanged a number of Christmas gifts, and what they gave me was a gift card for the credit balance. I mean, rather than issuing a credit balance, they gave me a gift card. Mm-hmm. So it's in many ways interchangeable.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, and if I can follow up, that then changes the quality, the nature of that. So instead of having to report it, as they currently do under law, as a credit balance, it then becomes a gift card, and it isn't. And so if it's never claimed, then that windfall goes, the retailer maintains that.
So just, I mean, for me, for clarity, and I'm sure I won't lend it to this, but I'm going to try. So on Friday, Kate Brown, Senator Brown, mentioned to me that we had bought her last session a gift card to Crater Lake Lodge, all the members. Yes, we give all our gifts at the end of the session. She never redeemed it, and now it's expired. So this law passes in 4 years. Now that she's out of the period of redemption, she could type on the website, go to the website, find the unclaimed property, and redeem her cash value.
That's correct. Depending on when it expired.
Although we talked about that in this bill too. So after 3 years, in 10 years, if she typed on that website, said, "I remember that. I've still got this little certificate. It's now expired past 3. Could she still redeem the $100?
That's correct. From us.
Correct. This bill doesn't pass, or we don't institute this bill. I guess the status quo reigns, which is...
She cannot redeem.
She cannot redeem the gift, and Crater Lake has got one more room than they had a couple weeks ago.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else wish to get in on this bill? If y'all could work with the proponents who are nodding and smiling behind you, just perfect. We'll bring it back. And Ms. Brandis, if you wanna, I know you don't want to see the bill advance, but if you wanna get any thoughts in, please feel free to get them to the Department of State Lands or Ms. Richardson.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Brzezinski.
If Ms. Brandis hasn't given that site, I'd love to see the site on the case, Tennessee case.
Paul is waving it in his right hand. Anything else, committee? Senator Metzger, is the pear now the state fruit, or is it?
It's in the process of being sliced and diced.
It is. Okay. That's a good one to end on. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 845 and adjourn the Senate Revenue Committee till 8:30 tomorrow.